Sunday, September the 21st.
Welcome to this Burlington Audio Podcast. We hope you will be encouraged and inspired in your faith as you listen to this message. We'd love to hear what you think. Please be in touch with us through the website. More information and many more podcasts are all at burlingtonbaptist.org.uk. Thanks for listening.
We start a new series today, everybody. Very exciting. We're going to be in the book of Genesis for the next number of weeks, thinking about the beginning of everything. As you think about the book of Genesis, what beginnings can you think of? What beginnings come to mind? Creation? Salvation, the beginning of God's rescue plan. Order, did you say? The beginning of order out of the chaos. The Spirit of God broods over the chaos and brings order. The beginning of sin, the beginning of the fall. Beginning of life. God puts breath. Thank you, Björn. Nice to have you with us. The beginning of God's call. Epitomized in one of the main characters of Genesis, the character of Abraham. Yeah. The beginning of God's kingdom impact, epitomized through the second big character in Genesis. Joseph. Joseph. All the J's. Joseph. The beginning of covenant, God's promise with his people. There's, if you like, the whole story in this one book. And we're going to work through some of its pages over these next few weeks and draw out themes that are there but get picked up and carried on through the whole of Scripture. And it starts with four bombshell words. Very simply, very succinctly, immensely profoundly, in the beginning, God. That's how it begins. It just says, in the beginning, God. But it's a truth that we've seen come under increasing attack as the years have rolled on. The ancient world, or before the 1600s, didn't seem to have much trouble with what seemed obvious to them, the existence of a creator being. And once they pursued science in their way, called philosophy in those days, there was this deep sense of belief that this ordered world, this designed world, could be investigated, not in order to disprove a creator or a designer, but in order to understand it better. There was a very close relationship between science and faith. The assumption was that a rational God made the world, and our rational minds could, in some ways, understand it. But that began to give way when the Enlightenment came along a couple of hundred years after the 1600s, and we began to think that we were cleverer than we actually were. We began to think that reason could make better sense of the world than revelation. If only our minds could grow enough, we would understand it all and make sense of it all. And we started pushing reason to the forefront and reducing things that didn't immediately make sense. However, most science still postulated the reality that there was a designer, a creator being behind the world. And then we come to the 1800s, famously kind of coined Darwinism after Charles Darwin, who again, with belief in a creator God, tried to understand how the world came into being. But there had been this tradition, this erosion that was taking place. And if evolution explains life, then maybe we don't need God after all. Maybe we can make sense of it all by ourselves. Maybe the material world, the things that you can touch and see and feel and smell, is all that there really is. And if we can make sense of that, then we will have made sense of everything. And so science began to be used as a tool to challenge the existence of God. Rather than as a tool to celebrate it and to understand the way that God had made us, it became a tool to challenge it. And that gave birth to something of what we've been part of or come to the end of in the 20th century, where a new kind of wave of atheism or popular skepticism became forefront in culture, if not in scientific exploration. And so you have the influences of people like Richard Dawkins challenging the existence of God. And science seemed to be pitted against the existence of God. So over there, there's science that doesn't believe in God anymore, got rid of him. And then there's faith over here that embraces God. And so we've grown up, those of us who've been around for a few decades, have grown up with a kind of popular polarization. Belief in God or disbelief in God. To believe in God over here requires faith. Disbelief in God is just because science has proved it. And so over here, there are people who need to believe in God despite the evidence. And then there are the clever people over here who just accept the evidence. And we've got this polarization that one requires faith, which is all woolly and vague, and the other requires intellect and rationale, which is solid and certain. And which are you going to choose? Faith. And that's been in the environment that I think many of us have grown up in. That's the sea we're swimming in. Does that make sense? Hello? That's the kind of, they're kind of pitted against each other, and you kind of have to decide. And if you decide faith over here, it's like you've got your fingers and toes crossed, clinging on against all odds. And if you're over here, well, you can be relaxed and comfortable because it's obvious, because science has proved it all anyway. It's all a load of whatever it's a load of. In the beginning, God. But that polarization is not true. It's a cultural phenomenon that actually isn't real. Science began out of a belief in a creator and a designer. Many scientists today, arguably most scientists today, carry levels of faith beyond the material world, and science affirms a beginning, a design, and a purpose. And the irony is, the more that science has evolved, the more questions it has thrown back up to push us back into this whole arena of ultimately where and what in are you going to put your faith. If we strip it all back, I want to suggest this morning, very simply, that faith in God is easier and more reasonable than faith in his non-existence. Both require faith. Question: is it easier to believe that God created the universe or that everything came from nothing? Which is easier? Which is easier? Have a quick chat. Which is easier? Which is easier, God or nothing made everything? There are all kinds of images that get used to help us think about the cause and effect. That beginning needs a beginner. Like a whole row of dominoes, in order for one to knock the other, to knock the other, to knock the other, you need someone to knock the first domino. So you need something outside of the system in order to help the system begin and get going. Beginning needs a beginner. If we were walking in the desert, another famous illustration, and you came across a jumbo jet, you would think, who made that and put that there? It would be unlikely that we would make the assumption that the jumbo jet just appeared in the middle of the desert with no beginning and no end. And so there's this natural way that we look at the world that makes sense with the bigger story. And we often think about, in our kind of popular conversation, hasn't science disproved all of that? Wasn't there the Big Bang? But you ask, the Big Bang with what? John Lennox, a famous Christian scientist, he said, science can tell you what happens when you boil water, but not why I put the kettle on. Think about that for a minute. Beginning needs a beginner. Order demands an organizer. Does your house naturally move towards order and tidiness? Most things, everything moves towards chaos and disorder, and yet we live in this mind-boggling system of order where the distance from the sun and the tilt of the earth and the strength of the magnetic field and the mixture of the atmosphere and the abundance of water all need to be in just the right amount for this whole thing to exist. And so we imagine going into a room with a number of dials, and there are a billion combinations on each of those dials, and yet each one is set to perfectly align with the other. It would be unusual for us to say that that was an accident. It would be even more unusual to say that that happened all by itself, as if out of nothing that came into existence. William Paley famously talked about, bearing in mind this is in the 1800s, about finding a watch with all its intricacies of mechanism and precision. And just to imagine that that just somehow came out of nowhere. The most beautiful system of the sun, planets, and comets could only proceed from the counsel and dominion of an intelligent being, said Sir Isaac Newton. Morally, or morality and meaning, must have a maker. This is the deepest and most profound one, I think. If it's true that everything came out of nothing, you came from nowhere, you are here for nothing, and you're going nowhere. How does that feel? Your life is utterly pointless. The whole thing, utterly meaningless. No purpose, no rights, no expectation. Human beings are completely irrelevant and accidental. That's the ultimate rational conclusion of a universe that came out of nowhere. And those that will argue such will admit that. Dawkins, for example, famously talks about no purpose, no evil, no good, nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. And he added that if that causes you trouble, you need to get over it. So there we are. He's not going to make a pastor anytime soon, is he? But think about it for a moment. Think about the depth with which we feel certain things. Imagine a world that's out of nothing, where there is no evil. That feels abhorrent to those of us who faced evil against us. Wouldn't you agree? A world where there is no right or wrong feels abhorrent as we look around the world today. A world where good is just a fabrication. Everything utterly meaningless. The fact of the matter is that the most reasonable belief is that we came from nothing, by nothing, and for nothing, says Quentin Smith, the atheist philosopher. We should acknowledge our foundation in nothingness and feel awe at the marvelous fact that we have a chance to participate briefly in this incredible sunburst that interrupts, without reason, the reign of non-being. Oh, I feel valued. I feel loved. I feel like I found my space in the universe. That instinctively, everything within our beings cries out against that. Wouldn't you agree? There's something deep within us that says that is not true, that we matter, that we're valuable. It doesn't matter that there might be 7 billion people on the earth today. Every single person matters. We feel that in our bones, which is why the news is so painful. It's why evil is so destructive. It's why the forces that are waging war around the world are so abhorrent, because deep inside each one of us, there's this longing. We are so much more valuable than just something that arose and disappeared without meaning or without purpose or without warrant. We scream against it. And so if for no other reason, we need to encourage people to think about what's there in the beginning. Because if that's not true, we are of all people, as Paul would say, mixing contacts, most pitied. Which is easier, God or nothing made everything? And as we said some moments ago, faith is required for all. This is a great Simon Harris quote. Atheism is not the absence of faith. It is faith in the absence of God. That's what it is. It's faith in the absence of God. Which do you find most compelling? Which is the one that motivates you and moves you the most to go, actually, I find my life rooted in the truth that above all else, beyond all else, before all else, at the end of all else, in the beginning and at the end, in the beginning, God. Which one? Why don't you just share that with the person sitting around you? So if then it is easier and more obvious to believe in the existence of a supreme being, why is there not more belief in God than there appears to be? The answer is, I think, that there's a lot more belief in God than there appears to be. It's just that we find it hard to live consistent with it. Or to put it the other way, true atheism is really hard to live consistently with it. Most people, or many people, become functional atheists. If you had a conversation with them about what they might believe, most people would say, well, it makes most sense that there is something somewhere that started the whole show off. That somehow there is something, someone outside the system that helps us make sense of it all. Most people, I think, find themselves in that place. It raises questions, what is that someone or that something? For sure. And Genesis will help us answer those questions. But I think most people want to hold that idea at a distance, to live and behave as functional atheists, even though that's not the position intellectually that they will hold. Because if I believe, I will stand out. We've created this culture where belief is to be seen as intellectually weak. That's back to that polarization. And so because it's become intellectually weak to put faith in God, then we become less committed to declare that, because most of us at the end of the day just want to be liked and want to fit in. We don't want to stand out. And so it minimizes our anchor in this truth. Our culture often presents faith in God as anti-intellectual, while atheism is cast as rational and evidence-based, even though atheism has its own leaps of faith. In other words, sometimes people don't reject God because of the evidence. They reject God because it's not very socially acceptable to accept him. And that's a massive thing, wouldn't you agree? It's not very socially acceptable, and most people conform to the pattern of this world. But Paul says, be transformed by the renewing of your mind, and do not follow the patterns of this world. If I believe, I will stand out. If I believe, I will have to obey. This is a really big one, isn't it? That if God is there, then what kind of demands does he make on me? If God is there, then I have to answer to someone beyond myself. I like the idea, the illusion of being free to do what the heck I like, which of course is no freedom ultimately at all. But if there's no higher authority to answer to, we like the idea of a worldview where we can set our own moral compass. The biggest problem with God isn't proving he exists, but admitting he rules. If I believe, it makes a demand on me. So it's easier to go, oh, I kind of believe there's someone out there somewhere. I kind of believe there's something outside the system, but I don't want to get too focused on that, because that will make a demand upon me. Which leads us perhaps to the third one, that if I believe, I'll have to be vulnerable. I'll have to face the things that in my world that hurt me and wound me. If I accept that there's a being, someone outside the system, I have to wrestle with the evil in the world, the suffering that's in the world. I have to wrestle with my own disappointments and failures. I have to wrestle with the things that have hurt me, the things that I misunderstand. So atheism becomes less about reason and more about refuge from the pain of the world. And if I believe, I'll have to be spiritual. Paul talked about spiritual blindness, didn't he? The God of this age has blinded the eyes of unbelievers. So to believe is to become spiritually enlightened. It will demand something at the deepest part of my being. We're four words in to the Bible, and it's demanding the deepest part of me. Think about that. It's not just an argument of the mind. In the end, it's a condition of the heart. Will I allow my heart to be open to the God that made all things? Which leads me to the challenge, to the disconnect sometimes. Which my head goes, I know that there's a God who made heaven and earth, but my heart wants to stay distant to that truth. Every time there's a disconnect between our heads and our hearts, we find ourselves in bondage. So my head wants to go, I know there's a God, that's what makes sense, I understand, but my heart wants to keep away from a God that if he is there, will inevitably demand something of me. Because how can I be made by him and not in be relationship with him? How can I be formed by him but not live a life that recognizes that my very existence is dependent upon him? In which area of your life and mine are we most atheistic? In other words, in which area of my life do I live as if his existence matters the least? See, on a Sunday morning, presumably in this environment, we're most connected. We're most believing. It's easier to believe here in this place than it is in some other places. Wouldn't you agree? It's easier to assume that God's going to work in this environment than perhaps in another environment. It's easier to have faith that God's going to do something here rather than have faith that he's going to do something there. And so we live with varying degrees of belief. So in which area of your life are you most atheistic? In what areas of your life do you act as if God doesn't exist, even though you believe in him? Ouch. What would it look like to invite God fully into that space? What would that look like? And if he made everything, if in the beginning God, then this environment is the same as all environments, isn't it, to him? This moment is the same as all moments. This place of all places. Because it all comes from him. Let's be quiet for a moment. And we just open up our hearts to a God that wants to speak to us, to encourage us. I want to thank you this morning, Father, that it's kind of easy to believe in you. It makes sense. It makes sense of what I see. It makes sense of what I know. It makes sense of how I feel. It makes sense of what I'm searching for. To know in the deepest part of my being, in my bones, that in the beginning, God. To know that it's all from you and it's all for you. To know that you are beyond the whole thing and you are present in every detail. Thank you that that's easy. Thank you that that's liberating. Thank you that that makes sense. But I recognize the ways my heart wants to keep a distance. I recognize the ways I don't want to stand out. I'd rather just go with the flow. I'd rather just absorb the cultural customs and ways of my time. I recognize the condition of my heart that I'd rather keep you at a distance. To embrace you in certain places in my life, but keep you at a distance elsewhere. And so I live with places of unbelief. Places where you haven't answered my prayers. Places where I don't behave as if you are all powerful. Places where I think you're not going to show up. Forgive me that double-mindedness. Lord, I pray. And if I believe there are things in my heart I know I'll need to face and figure out, and I'd rather not, so I keep you distant. Where I keep you at arm's length because I'm angry at the prayers you haven't answered. I keep you at arm's length because I'm frustrated at the way things are turning out. I keep you at arm's length because I'm longing for something to be what it's not. And so it becomes easy not to believe in you there. Not to believe in you for that. Not to trust you for this. And if I believe in you, I'll have to be spiritual. I'm not sure I want to give you the deepest parts of my being. I'm not sure I like the idea of you having all of me. And yet it's all yours anyway. And when I act as if it isn't, I deceive myself. I live with an illusion. So I choose to offer you the deepest parts of who I am. What's God saying? And what are you going to do about it? What's God saying? Where's his whisper this morning? Where have you drifted into unbelief? Where does your behavior confess that atheistic spirit? Where is the place where you invite him again? To be in that place where truthfully he's always been. It's just you haven't recognized it for a while.